Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert, and it's that time of year when a person needs to be careful, needs to take care. The days are long and hot and hazy. Another summer to endure. It's easy to lose your determination in such conditions in a dreary little town, nobody on the streets after dark, nobody except for a couple of hot rodders racing each other, or more often racing themselves come midnight. You can hear them from one end of the valley to the next. How do they never crash into anything? It just eats at your nerves, this kind of weather. And what's worse is you know that the hot weather is a month or two away. What's bearable when you're alone under a cottonwood and the breeze is absolute torment when you're trying to get yourself from point A to point B and see ugliness all around. Dead eyes behind the cracked windshields of erratically piloted vehicles, the never-ending trash piles, empty strip malls of crumbling stucco and blank plastic signs, long stretches of highway with nothing but human-built desolation. The ragweed's coming up, too. Best to stay on the property in the company of the creatures who've survived this aesthetic apocalypse. The trio of young rock squirrels who've decided to base their lives around the big water bowl I leave out for the birds, well, they are starting to question their initial enthusiasm for life. One of them, the smallest of this bunch, has taken to stretching out on its belly on the shaded patio, legs splayed out, eyes half closed. It looks sort of like when the cartoon coyote falls off a cliff and lands flattened on the desert below. Oh, and how they love that cold water. As soon as I dump another tray of ice cubes in the bowl, they are all around it. They love the ice-cold water. One of these bozos tried to stand on the unstable iceberg created by a clot of six or seven ice cubes in the middle of the bowl and fell right in and ran like hell, but was back again in a few short minutes, drinking away. The morning doves give themselves freeze brain. It's comical to watch too much cold water, and then they walk around in a tight circle with their head sideways. A minor inconvenience, an inconvenient truth. Then there's the little bully bird and his growing harem. Six or eight babies, too. He keeps watch over them all, shooing the big spiny lizard away when it crawls up too close to their nest in the eaves. Last week, I saw him up on a dead Joshua tree branch with two females, and he was taking turns with them for all to see. the king of the dirty little birds. Sparrows, I mean. Nature's pest. And then by 3 o'clock or so in the afternoon, they are all gone. Even the plump cottontail that likes to nap on the doormat. And I'm still here. Trying to type something, trying to get these mail orders out before I give up and set fire to the house and get behind the wheel and head for the mountains. Higher mountains than the ones around me. These baked brown mountains that offend the soul in this sort of weather. Higher mountains, yes, because it's cooler, sure, but mostly because it's so far away. So far away, and less people, at least in the direction I'm going. A good day is a day without encountering another human soul, especially when you're outside, walking, working, or sitting beneath a pinion in the afternoon, dozing like a cottontail on a shady doormat. Inside, it's true, people get lonely, can't help it. We are, according to the textbooks, social animals. Takes 15 years for babies to grow up. And then, absurdly, we insist they spend another half a decade or longer as children when they should be out raiding the monasteries with their siblings and cohorts. Another season in the longboats. But outside, even in the supposedly lifeless deserts the green energy companies like to destroy, there is life all around, the best company you can keep. Just listen for the ravens.
Desert Oracle Radio.
Oh, and there are the corvid cousins, the troop of scrub jays, and the desert willows up the wash, nature's weirdos. Glimpses of snakes, of lizards, and the chattering call of the gamble's quail, a half dozen little ones scurrying around below. The distant call and sometimes close-up appearance of the various local coyotes. Now and then, late in the day, a bobcat crosses the trail just as I come around, and sometimes there are black-tailed mule deer in the shade of a willow or a big juniper, still as stones. The usual wildlife of the West if you've got some open space around you. The mountain lions I mostly know by their signs. The scat on the dirt road, the occasional late night shriek. And the discarded legs of prey that trail dogs take such delight in discovering amongst the thick brush. Bighorn sheep legs or mule deer legs, the only such animals we have around here. Now these rock squirrels are desert squirrels, squirrels of the Southwest. They don't even need water beyond what they get from the various seeds, grasses, fruits and bugs that they eat. But these young squirrels, they are fools for cold water. They just hang around that bowl for half the day. And now I cannot replace that bowl with a proper bird bath, even if I wanted to, because what will the squirrels and the bunnies do? It has been a while since the Old West was a real time. The Wild West. The frontier. It was mostly gone by the time it became a national sensation during and immediately after the American War between the states. And by 1880 or so, it was just about gone for good. Save for the Alaskan territory, which Russia had sold to the United States in 1867, and which for a quarter century afterwards was much like it had been for many thousands of years. A pre-industrial human society within a landscape and climate dominated by the whims of wild nature. Alaska wasn't even a governed territory until 1912, and only gained statehood and all its dreary bureaucracy and formal exploitation of what we call resources in 1959. The same year Kind of Blue was released by Miles Davis. When the United States had won its independence, two-thirds of today's contiguous U.S. belonged to Spain, including the current-day California, Texas, Florida, the whole of the U.S. Gulf Coast, and all the lands we presently call the American Southwest, including Nevada, Utah, Arizona, New Mexico. That was the boxed-in frontier, plus the northern strip from the Dakotas west to Washington Territory. And the Southwest was already a content mill for dime novels and fake cowboy songs when Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday roamed the boomtowns looking for action. There are remnants of it, mostly the ruins of the old mining settlements, the old tailings piles, the old toxic waste. Those towns that mostly dried up forever once the silver and gold was pretty much gone. But the magic time, the time of the temporary autonomous zone, was short-lived, like always. We know it from movies and TV, mostly. Tombstone, Deadwood, Pale Rider, High Noon, Stagecoach, etc. But a century ago, before movies had sound or color, there were still Wild West shows playing to big crowds, although they were at the end of their run, too. A fantastic half-century run as some of the biggest entertainment spectacles in history. And lots of still-living legends took part because people have to make a living. And it's generally more fun and more financially rewarding to be a traveling entertainer signing autographs at the fancy restaurant than to be a real Old West sheriff. Or Indian warlord. So Annie Oakley and Buffalo Bill Cody, Red Eagle and Chief Sitting Bull, and scores of other real or pretend Army scouts, Indian sharpshooters, and bronco-riding cowboys took to touring, took to the road. First to the population centers on the East Coast, later to the big growing cities of the Midwest and Mississippi Valley, as those former frontier lands settled into cities and suburbs, stockyards, train yards. Like in Chicago, where some 20,000 spectators witnessed the World's Fair run of Buffalo Bill's Wild West show at the 18 and 93 Chicago World's Fair. These traveling extravaganzas traveled the world, too, mostly to Europe, where people were as crazy for Old West entertainment as in North America. Queen Victoria enjoyed these various staged outrages. This was the time of the freak show of Joseph Merrick put on display as the Elephant Man. The circus was in town again, back in Empire City. And it wore a cowboy hat. But here's a colorful description. Wild West show acts included a bison hunt, train robbery, Indian war battle, and the usual grand finale of the show, attack on the burning cabin, in which Indians attacked a settler's cabin and were repulsed by Buffalo Bill, cowboys, and Mexicans. The crowds loved the displays of trick riding and trick shooting. And while the last of these traveling spectaculars were bankrupt or were otherwise worn down and wrung out by the early 1920s, much of the culture of traveling Wild West performers and their many animals can still be witnessed at the annual powwows still held by many American tribes today, or on the rodeo circuit. Like the mule days they just had up the road in Bishop. It's a great time to be in Bishop, even if you don't go to the fairgrounds, although you should, at least for a couple of hours. It's a great time because the whole town is full of cowboys and cowgirls, and the horse trailers are everywhere, and the ranching families come down from Bridgeport and Adobe Valley and beyond. And visitors can buy tax-free gasoline and marijuana at the Paiute reservations along Highway 395. But the era of the Wild West spectacular really might have ended when Calamity Jane was fired for the last time in 1902 for her usual transgressions of drinking and fighting. The new cowboys, the pretend cowboys, would learn to behave, learn to obey their paymasters at the movie studios and the corporate suite, or go back to being a drunk on Sunset Boulevard outside the drugstore, hassling the customers. Some of these Wild West performers even moved into the movies. People like Tom Mix, Will Rogers. But mostly they died off because they had lived out their lives one way or the other, and it wasn't the same world anymore anyway.
Dress America! Every Sunday in his Sunday clothes, he beats it for the village where he always goes. And every girl in town is Joe's, cause he's a regular bear. When he starts spinning on the dance hall floor, no one but a lunatic would start a war. The wise men know his 44 makes men dance so fair. He always sings ragging music through the saddle as he swings back and forward in the saddle on a horse that is syncopated, gaited, and is such a funny meter to the roll of his repeater. How they run when they hear his gun, because the western folks all know he's a highfalutin, rootin', shootin' son of a gun from Arizona, ragtime cowboy Joe.
One of the richest people on this entire planet sent Captain Kirk up into the cold, dead void of space for real, not so long ago. It was a publicity stunt for a space tourism company. Another expensive plaything for the kind of people who have nothing and no one left to buy. And William Shatner, who has played Captain Kirk for the entirety of my life, and most of yours, if not all of it, well, he brought home the truth. He brought it back to Earth. I saw a cold, dark, black emptiness. Unlike any blackness you can see or feel on Earth. It was deep, enveloping, all-encompassing. I turned back toward the light of home. I could see the curvature of Earth, the beige of the desert, the white of the clouds, and the blue of the sky. It was life, nurturing, sustaining life, Mother Earth. And I was leaving her. Everything I had expected to see was wrong. I discovered that the beauty isn't out there. It's down here with all of us. Leaving that behind made my connection to our tiny planet even more profound. It was among the strongest feelings of grief I have ever encountered. The contrast between the vicious coldness of space and the warm nurturing of Earth below filled me with overwhelming sadness. Every day we are confronted with the knowledge of further destruction of Earth at our hands. The actor William Shatner wrote that, following his brief voyage into orbit on a corporate space tourism flight that blasted out of the New Mexico desert, October 13 of 2021. It is, I believe, in a new book that he has written, new as of 2022, anyway. It is called Boldly Go by William Shatner. Amboy to Sizex and across the Great Mojave Wilderness. This is Desert Oracle Radio. New soundscapes on this program by the one and only Red, Blue, Black, Silver. And I am your host and editor, janitor, Ken Lane. Listen, radio friends, I've just learned my old friend Mojo Nixon is going to be honored by bipartisan resolution in the Ohio State Legislature, Ohio being where he lived for the last decade of his life, and also where he went to college and earned his political science degree back in 1979. The day after he is honored by the legislature, the Mojo Nixon exhibit will be unveiled at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, because Cleveland rocks. I would love to go, but I'm broke like a lot of us, and I'm still trying to save up enough to pay the printers and the post office to get issue 11 out the door, and I need to straighten up the garage and the shed and get my teeth cleaned and write my will and do something about the roof. Just an endless, boring list of chores. Chores I don't care to do at all. But if you are anywhere near the great state of Ohio, or you have a little more freedom than I have at the moment, the public is welcome to attend the legislative session of the, what's it called, the Buckwheat State. If the public is willing to go through a metal detector and such, so allow for some extra time, Tuesday, June 11th at 11 a.m., according to legendary Mojo Nixon manager Bullethead, which is his legal name, I believe, the public can also witness the unveiling of the Mojo Nixon exhibit at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, 2 p.m. on Wednesday, June 12. Tell them you're there for the Mojo Nixon unveiling, and they'll point you in the right direction or call security or whatever. Among the rare objects on display for the first time will be Mojo's Dean Martin embossed Guild Starfire guitar, the original handwritten lyrics to Elvis Is Everywhere, and the Mojo TV prop he used to wear on his fool head. Good night from the Voice of the Desert.